Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we are opening up a file that deals with a problem that is, paradoxically invisible, yet completely devastating.
Mm-hmm.
We aren't talking about a loud crisis that everyone sees coming. We're talking about silence, specifically organizational silence.
It sounds peaceful, doesn't it? A quiet office. But in the context of leadership and safety, silence is actually, well, it's the sound of a ticking bomb.
Exactly. We're talking about that phenomenon where employees, the people on the ground who know how things really work, deliberately choose to just withhold information.
Or ideas or safety concerns.
Right. Because they're afraid. And we aren't talking about being afraid of like a little awkwardness in a meeting. The stakes here can be life and death.
Absolutely. I mean, the research we're looking at today, it draws a direct line from this kind of silence to catastrophes like the Space Shuttle Challenger and Columbia disaster.
Those are the ultimate tragic examples.
They are. Because in both those cases, the technical data, it was there. There were engineers inside NASA who had serious doubts. But the culture, that organizational silence, it acted like a filter.
A filter that stopped critical information from getting to the people who could have stopped the launch.
Exactly.
So the mission for today is to figure out how to break that filter. We are deep diving into a 2025 dissertation by Vernon S. Brown. He conducted this just massive study on the U.S. Department of the Navy.
But here's the key distinction, and I think it's so important.
Yeah.
He wasn't studying the SEALs or the Marines in combat. He was studying the machine behind the machine.
The civilian workforce.
Right, the civilian workforce. We often forget this, but the Department of the Navy employs over 200,000 civilians. These are the people handling logistics, engineering, admin. It's a massive, rigid bureaucracy.
And that bureaucracy is the perfect petri dish for our topic.
Yeah.
Brown's goal was to figure out, in that specific, high-pressure, rule-bound environment, what can a supervisor actually do to make it safe for people to speak up?
And the answer he found is it's going to force a lot of leaders to look in the mirror, because the leadership style that actually works is almost the exact opposite of the Hollywood image of a military leader.
We all have that image in our heads. You know, the general on the tank, music swelling, giving the rah-rah speech to rally the troops.
Precisely. In the literature, we call that inspirational motivation. And spoiler alert, Brown's data suggests that the rah-rah speech might be one of the least effective tools for getting people to tell you the hard truth.
Okay, that is a massive claim, and we are going to unpack exactly why that is. But before we get to the solution, we need to understand the environment. Brown describes the world these civilians work in using the acronym VUCA.
Which is a term the business world borrowed from the military, ironically enough.
Let's break that down. VUCA. Volatile.
Uncertain, complex, and ambiguous. It's basically a framework for understanding chaos.
Okay, so volatile is fast, unpredictable change.
Mm-hmm. Uncertain means the past doesn't really predict the future. Complex, there are too many moving parts to see the whole picture. And ambiguous means the rules of the game are just blurry.
It makes total sense for a battlefield. But Brown's arguing this applies to what a guy sitting at a desk in the Pentagon, too.
Absolutely. I mean, think about the public sector. It might seem stable, right? Mm-hmm. Job security and all that. But the environment is incredibly difficult. You have these rigid hierarchies, but then you have political volatility. Priorities shift every single time there's an election.
And Brown points out this creates a specific psychological state in the workforce. A risk-averse ethos.
That's the polite way of putting it.
Right.
It really means everyone is terrified of making a mistake. In a bureaucracy, the status quo is God. If you follow the rules and stay quiet, you're safe.
But if you suggest a new idea, or worse, point out that the current plan is flawed.
You're disrupting the system. You're a liability. You are sticking your neck out. And in a VUCA environment, the last thing a manager wants is someone rocking the boat so the employee adapts.
And the adaptation is silence.
It is.
So the metric Brown is trying to move here, the antidote to all this, is psychological safety climate, or PSC.
Right. And we need to be really precise about this definition, because psychological safety is a buzzword that gets, misused a lot. It is not about being nice.
It's not about beanbag chairs and free coffee.
Oh, far from it. Psychological safety is defined as a shared belief that the workplace is safe for interpersonal risk-taking.
Interpersonal risk-taking. That's the key phrase.
It is. It means I can ask a stupid question. I can admit I made a mistake. Or I can look my boss in the eye and say, sir, I think this strategy is going to fail. And I know with certainty that I won't be humiliated or punished for saying it.
To find out what creates that specific kind of safety, Brown went big. He didn't just interview a few people.
No, no. This is heavy-duty quantitative research. He used archival data from the 2023 Federal Employee Viewpoint Survey, the FEVS.
That's the government-wide census, right?
It is. And after he filtered it down to just the Navy civilians, he had a final sample size of 9,160 employees.
Wow. 9,160. That's a massive data set.
In social science, that is enormous. It gives us a very high degree of confidence. This isn't just anecdotal evidence. This is a clear signal cutting through all the statistical noise.
Okay, so we have the setting, the Navy bureaucracy. We have the goal, psychological safety. Now let's look at the variables. Brown tested a framework called transformational leadership.
It's usually considered the gold standard in management theory.
The basic idea is that leaders elevate their followers.
Right.
Get them to look beyond just their own self-interest.
Exactly. It's not just I pay you, you do the work. It's about transforming the people you lead.
And the framework splits this into four distinct behaviors, the four I's. I want to walk through these so we can all visualize them.
Let's do it.
First up, idealized influence.
Think of this as the role model. This is the leader who leads by example. High ethics, high integrity. You respect them because they walk the walk, not just because of their rank.
Got it. Okay, second, inspirational motivation.
The visionary. This is the cheerleader, the leader who paints that compelling picture of the future. We're going to change the world. All about optimism and team spirit.
Third, individualized consideration.
The mentor. This leader sees you, the individual. They coach you. They listen to your specific needs. They treat you like a unique human being, not just an employee ID number.
And finally, intellectual stimulation.
The challenger. This is the leader who kind of messes with your head in a good way. They reframe problems. They ask you to question assumptions. They encourage you to find new solutions, even if it contradicts how we've always done it.
Okay, so we have the role model, the visionary, the mentor, and the challenger. Brown took these four and put them into a regression analysis to see which one actually predicts if an employee feels safe to speak up.
And this is where the conventional wisdom gets taken out back and shot.
Let's start with the broad strokes. Did they all, you know, work at all?
Broadly, yes. All four dimensions did positively correlate with psychological safety. So doing something positive is generally better than being a toxic boss. No surprise there.
But correlation just means they show up together. The regression analysis... That tells us which one is actually driving the bus.
Exactly. Regression lets you stack them against each other to see which factor has the unique predictive power. And when Brown did that, one dimension just completely dominated the others. It wasn't even close.
All right, let's reveal the winner. The strongest predictor of safety in the U.S. Navy civilian workforce is...
Intellectual stimulation. The challenger.
The one that involves questioning people.
It had the strongest correlation, a massive 0.783, and the strongest predictive power in the regression model, a beta value of 0.520.
Okay, I want to pause here because that feels so counterintuitive. If I want to make people feel safe, my instinct is to be the mentor, you know, be nice and supportive, or the visionary. Why does challenging people make them feel safer?
It's a paradox, isn't it? You'd think challenge equals stress. But you have to go back to the context we were just talking about, the bureaucracy, the risk-averse ethos.
Where the default setting is shut up and color.
Correct. In that environment, silence is obedience. It is the safe path. So now, imagine a leader who uses intellectual stimulation. They're coming to you and explicitly saying, I want you to find a better way to do this.
Tell me why my assumption is wrong.
I want you to innovate. They're explicitly authorizing dissent.
Ah. Okay, that's the key. They're rewriting the rules of the game.
Precisely. By asking for the challenge, they are taking the risk out of risk-taking. If the boss asks you to critique the plan, you aren't being a rebel anymore. You aren't rocking the boat.
You're just doing your job.
You're doing exactly what you were told to do. It's a brilliant insight. You validate their voice by demanding it.
It actually changes the atmosphere from permission to speak to obligation to think.
And that lowers the fear of retaliation more than any amount of kindness ever could. Because you aren't just allowed to speak, you are expected to.
So, the challenger takes the gold medal. Who took silver?
The runner-up was individualized consideration. The mentor.
So stealth.
It was the second strongest predictor with a beta of 0.311. And this makes perfect sense as a complement to the challenger.
How so?
Well, If the challenger part handles the intellectual permission, the mentor part handles the emotional security.
It's the I care about you as a person piece.
Exactly. Brown makes a really key point here about the government context. In a massive machine-like hierarchy, it is so easy to feel like a cog, a replaceable part.
And if you feel like a cog, you keep your head down.
But if your supervisor treats you as an individual, listens to your development needs, cares about your career, it validates your worth, it builds a safety net. My boss knows me, so if I bring up a problem, they won't just fire me.
So the winning formula that emerges is challenge their brain, but care about their growth.
That's it.
Now, we have to address the twist, the one that failed, the one everyone thinks is the most important. Inspirational motivation, the rah-rah speech. The visionary, how did it do in the model?
It didn't. It was statistically insignificant.
Insignificant, as in it had no effect.
The beta value was -0.009, basically zero, which means once you account for the fact that a leader is challenging and mentoring their people, giving an inspiring speech added absolutely no unique value to predicting safety.
That is just a stunning finding. We spend so much time and money celebrating charismatic leaders. Why does the data say it's useless for safety?
Well, think about the skepticism of the average government employee, right? You've seen administrations come and go. You've seen transformation initiatives launch and fail a dozen times.
You're jaded. You know the speech is just a speech.
You're reality-based. If a leader comes in with these high-flying speeches about transforming the naval fleet of the future, but the procurement process on your desk is still broken and nobody wants to fix it, the speech just feels like fluff.
Or worse, like manipulation.
Exactly. But there's a deeper issue here that Brown touches on. Inspiration is not authorization.
Inspiration is not authorization. Unpack that.
You can be incredibly inspired by your leader. You can love the mission. You can be ready to run through a wall for the Navy. But if you still believe that pointing out a safety violation will get you labeled as a troublemaker, you will stay silent.
You can be an inspired mute.
That's the phrase. Inspiration motivates effort. It motivates compliance. It gets people to row the boat faster. It does not authorize dissent.
And to stop a challenger disaster, you need dissent. You need someone to stop rowing and say, hey, there's a hole in the boat.
That is the takeaway of this whole deep dive for me. Charisma does not buy you the truth.
Wow. Okay, so what about the fourth one? Idealized influence. The role model.
It had a small but positive impact. You can think of this as the table stakes.
A baseline requirement.
Right. It's about ethics and integrity. If you don't have integrity, if you're unethical, nothing else works. Trust just collapses. So you need that foundation. But on its own, just being ethical isn't enough to drag the truth out of a fearful organization.
So let's bring this down to the ground. I'm a manager listening to this, maybe in a corporation, maybe in government. How do I apply these findings tomorrow?
Okay, if you want to stop organizational silence and prevent your own mini disasters, you have to audit your own leadership toolkit.
Step one, stop practicing speeches in the mirror.
Yeah, stop focusing on being the charismatic hero. The data says your charisma isn't helping people feel safe to speak up. It might make them feel good, but it won't make them truthful.
Step two, become a pest.
Become a challenger. Start your meetings differently. Instead of just giving directions, ask, what are we missing? How could this plan fail? Who sees a flaw in my logic?
But you have to mean it. You can't just ask the question and then bite the head off the person who answers.
That is the critical execution point. When someone actually speaks up, especially if they are disagreeing with you, you have to reward it publicly. Thank you for catching that. That's a great pushback. That's how you build the culture. You prove the challenge is welcome.
And step three, don't forget the human element.
Individualized consideration. You have to balance the challenge with the care. If you just challenge people all day but don't care about them, you're just an aggressive jerk.
Right.
And if you care about them but never challenge them, you're just a nice friend. You need both to get high performance safety.
It's just so interesting. We usually dismiss things like empathy, listening, encouraging dissent as the soft skills.
Right. The fuzzy stuff HR makes you do.
But this research proves that in high stakes environments, literally life and death scenarios like the Navy, these soft skills are the hard strategic drivers of risk management.
Absolutely. They are the structural beams that hold the roof up. Without them, the silence sets in, and eventually the system fails. It's not a matter of if, but when.
It really forces us to rethink that military stereotype we started with.
It does. It completely inverts it.
We have this cultural image of this strong, silent, directive leader, the one who gives orders, demands loyalty. But based on this, that archetype might actually be a security risk.
That's the provocative thought I'm left with. If the safest leader is the one who invites challenge, then the leader who demands silence isn't strong.
They're just flying blind.
Exactly.
Perhaps the strongest leader is simply the one who is confident enough to wake up every morning and ask, "How could I be wrong today?"
I think that's the safest bet for all of us.
Something to chew on. Thanks for joining us on The Deep Dive. We'll see you next time.